Welcome to the Construction Industry Podcast. Fresh ideas for today's construction professional. The Construction Industry Podcast is brought to you by Remontech, Remote Monitoring Technologies. Find us on the web at constructionindustrypodcast.com.
Hello everybody, my name is Cesar Abade and I am your construction camera specialist. This is the 48th episode of the Construction Industry Podcast, a show dedicated to helping you navigate the waters of the construction industry. Whether you're starting your career, have been in the construction industry for years, or if you are a construction project owner or a construction business owner, there's always something new related to this beautiful industry of ours we can all learn. Today, I talked to Todd DeWalt from SnapFieldReport.com on the topic of change management. Stay tuned. Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another show, another episode of the Construction Industry Podcast. I know it's been a while, but I'm back here. Today's episode is for those of us struggling with managing change and change orders in particular in our projects. Are you suspecting that you're not getting paid for work that you've done because maybe you're forgetting to document all that is happening, or maybe you don't have a system in place that you trust to document work that you've done that's outside of scope? Or as an owner, are you concerned that maybe change orders are not necessarily being used properly in your project, if you know what I mean? Well, today's episode is custom made for you. It's a bit of a long one, so how about we get started?
And now, our feature segment.
Good afternoon, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well, Cesar. How are you?
I am doing great. Thanks for being on the show today. We're going to talk about change management, correct?
That is correct.
the infamous change management, or some people love it, some people hate it, but we all need to deal with it. So, but before we get there, how about you tell us a little bit about your background in the construction sector and how you got to be where you are today?
Yeah, sure. It's a little bit of a colorful background, I guess. My background is in civil engineering, and when I got out of school, I decided to go the construction management route and went to work for a large commercial general contractor doing office buildings, healthcare facilities, so that sort of thing. Did that for about 5 years. And then I had the great idea to have my own construction business, and did residential work and some land development, some big box redevelopment work, and thoroughly scratched that want to own my own business itch after about 3 years. We'll just say it was very educational, let's put it that way. And then I started to work as an owner's rep. I went to work for a company that managed projects for large Fortune 50 clients like Procter & Gamble, Duke Energy, some other big clients doing basically cube farm rearrangements and office building work, that sort of thing. I did some big projects there. And then I guess I hit the pinnacle of my building construction career and had the opportunity to spend about 2.5 years working on a $110 million senior living community, high-rise construction, tough site, very challenging. So did that for about 2.5 years, and which was very interesting. But the economy changed, adjusted, went down, collapsed, whichever term you want to use, in 2008, 2009. So then I went into a business development and sales role, which for a guy that had an engineering and project management background was surprisingly fun. And then the last few years, I have been managing a small to medium size municipal construction company. And we work with municipal clients doing utility work, wastewater rehabilitation. So about 17, 18 years. And during that time, I've been a general contractor, an owner's rep, a construction business owner, subcontractor, and a sales guy. So I think I've seen just about every facet of the business, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. And yet, excuse me, and yet, after all that experience and seeing all those things, you decide to focus on change management with your, would you say it's a new business, it's a side business, or how would you describe it?
Yeah, it's a new side business. over the past several years, well, throughout my career, I've found that, frankly, contractors, and I'm talking about us as contractors, we don't embrace technology like we should. We don't use tools that are available. And I found myself building tools in whichever role I was in, whether it was sales or owner's rep or general contractor, owning my own business. I was building tools and processes and systems. And over the past two and a half years, as I've been with the municipal contracting company I currently manage, I would say we were the prototypical small to medium-sized business. Didn't have any systems, didn't have any tools, and frankly, we were getting our butts kicked when it came to tough contracts. We did well in certain types of contracts, but when things got tough and there was there were conflicts, disagreements, things of that nature, we just hadn't covered ourselves very well. So I spent a lot of time building tools to track change orders, to report completed work, to handle equipment issues as the business grew, and we had these pains. As a pain came up, I just figured out a way to make it go away because it hurt me. I was one of the guys dealing with it. So over the course of these couple of years, I built these tools and it really helped our business tremendously and took away a lot of these growing pains and actually helped bottom line as well. So I decided, you know, I've got these tools that are built, and I look around and I hear contractors talking about having similar pain. So I thought, well, let's just make a few phone calls and see if perhaps some of the folks in my network would be interested in it. So I told them, hey, I built these tools that we use. Is this something that would help you? And I got some pretty resounding responses. Yes, absolutely. We're dealing with the same problem. You know, what have you done to solve it, sort of a thing. So that's kind of how I got to where I'm at now. I'm certainly not a software developer by any means. I'm a construction guy with an engineering background, and just seem to find myself building tools. So I guess I'm a sort of a somewhat reluctant tech guy now, but I've found that these tools helped us, and I want to make them available to other people as well. Hopefully it'll help them.
Very good. And we'll at the end here, we're going to tell the listener how to check out the tool that you created and how to test it. And you know, I think it's in, is it in beta still, or is it already out and launched?
It is launched. Okay. So I would say it's in beta. It's a system that we've been using for our internal crews for the past couple of years, but anxious to get some feedback from some other folks so we can tweak it and make it as effective as possible. Mm-hmm.
All right. And as I said, we'll talk about that towards the end and give out some links so people can go and check it out.
Okay, now, great.
Yeah. So now, when it comes to change management, in your opinion, in your experience, why is it that it's a problem and what's broken with it?
Well, I think there's a few bad perceptions. I think change management or change orders, let's just talk about change orders specifically. Mm-hmm. Change orders have a bad reputation. From an owner's side, if you mention a change order to a construction project owner, then the chest tightens up and they clench up and they see that their budget's getting blown and they see it as a negative that's going to hurt them. And on the engineering side, the construction side, you have there's the famous pictures that are on the internet where there's a little 19-foot boat that says original contract on the back, and then there's a 60-foot yacht next to it that says change order on the back. So there's this perception that contractors think, oh, a change order is the opportunity to stick it to the owner and get rich. So that's one of the problems. And the reality is it's somewhere in between. Change orders don't have to be bad. They can be win-win. If you ask most people in the construction business about a change order, it's about how do you divide up the pie and how do I get a bigger piece of the pie? And I think there's an opportunity to look at these sort of situations, these inevitable changes that come up as how do we not slice up the pie and fight over the pie? How do we make the pie bigger? So it's a win-win situation. So I think that's one of the things that's broken about it. And then there's just so much baggage, so many bad stories about projects gone bad because of either corrupt, immoral, illegal practices. So change orders just have a bad name all the way around. And I think in this day and age, we really need to fix it because, you know, we're, as contractors, we're a little bit behind the curve when it comes to professionalism and perception. And I think we could do better.
Mm-hmm. And from my vantage point here, I see that this is the, and tell me if I'm wrong. I'm not building things. We provide a service, right? So we're kind of we're always there, but on the sidelines. But from my point of view, it seems like every construction project, I think it's a combination of requirements being very well defined at the beginning, and people operating on very tight budgets because they were all lowest bidders. And you know, which adds to it a very high percentage of chance that things could go wrong, and then that's when, you know, change orders happen, and that's where the problem starts to surface. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. With a lot of it goes back to the project delivery method, the competitive, the conventional design, bid, build based on a low price bid. As you said, that you're dealing with razor thin margins up and down the project vertical, contractors, general contractor, subcontractors, second tier subcontractors, vendors, they're all vying to get that project, especially in the economic times we're in. And it just lends itself to anytime there's an opportunity for a change, people almost have to take advantage of it. And there's a lot of contractors whose business development strategy or profit strategy is to bid low and then hammer the owner with change orders and make the money on change orders. So a lot of it goes back to just the way projects are delivered with the conventional low bid approach. There are other delivery methods that are much more efficient and do not get the parties into change order disputes quite as much as the low bid. You know, the design build approach is primarily one of the main benefits of design build is that the owner has a one party to point at, and that is their design build constructor, the team of architects, engineers, and builders. The construction manager at risk offers some other benefits as well. So there are other delivery methods out there that are much more progressive than the low bid approach that make this change order problem much less. But in the municipal world, it's the procurement guidelines are stuck on, for the most part, low bid. And that's just the world that we're stuck in.
Yeah. Not just municipal, but also state and province here in Canada. And not to mention, you know, federal contracts, and that's a whole different.
Correct. That's right. Yeah. The federal, state, every highway project, bridge project, school, anything that's funded with the public works or government or taxpayer money, the MO is it has to be low bid. Now, there's some movement in that from the low bid to other delivery methods, but that's a big ships are slow to turn, and that's a very big ship that's turning very slowly.
Right. And especially in times of recession and economic hardship, that's a lot of the work is for the government. So it's something that it seems like the worse the economy, the more we have to deal with, because, you know, the percentage of our jobs you know, when it comes to government work, just kind of go up during these times. So let's talk about, we talked about this by email, and we actually talked on the phone before as well. And you talk about six ways six strategies or key strategies for successful change management. How about we talk about each one of those?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so number one was be proactive. I'll just cue you, and then you can take it from there.
Perfect. Some of these are, you know, I'll say it, some of these are common sense. Some of these are not rocket science. I don't know that any of them are rocket science, to be quite frank. But if we'll implement some of these strategies and all of these strategies, I'm pretty confident that things will get better. And because these are strategies that I've found work well for me, and I use them today when I manage projects and dealing with owners. So being proactive. One of the big problems with change orders is that they come at the end. You have these post-mortem, retroactive, oh, by the way, we forgot to tell you, change orders. And I've heard, I've worked with folks who have said, we've identified this issue in the field during the project. Let's go ahead and finish it, and then we'll hit them with a change order at the end. Guys, it just doesn't work, okay? And think about it. Would you, if you have subcontractors that work for you or you have some vendor that works for you, you hate that. If somebody tries to nail you at the end, everybody hates that. So we need to be proactive with these things. We need to stop being adversarial with our clients, where we're on one side of the table trying to pry money out of their hands. If we'll get on their side of the table and be proactive and share with them some of the issues they need to be concerned about and guide them through this project process, it's going to make the project much smoother. It will keep the lawyers out of the project, and it will definitely create a better relationship with your client for future work. And I've found that it actually makes more money than the other alternative. So, some of the things we can do to be proactive. One is, if there is a significant chance of some sort of a change occurring, let's say it's encountering bad soil or rock that has to be taken out for a foundation or a pipeline project, if there's something that's not currently in your contract and there's a potential that you will run into it, let's say there's a greater than 50% chance that you'll run into the situation, go ahead and negotiate a price for that just in case you need it. Because what may not be so apparent, but when you're dealing with a corporate client or a municipal client, industrial client, federal agency, one of the biggest challenges to getting a change order approved is not necessarily the cost. And that is surprising, but one of the biggest challenges is simply going through the chain of command or the procurement process to get approval from all the right people. Now, for example, when I was managing projects for Procter & Gamble, if there was any sort of a contract change or budget change in excess of $500,000, it required approval by 8 to 10 people. So if you imagine trying to coordinate vacation schedules for 8 to 10 people, and it was a serial type approval, one person to the next person to the next person to the next person, that could take 6 to 8 weeks by itself. So that's not so apparent, but that's really what's going on behind the scenes. There may not be a problem with the budget. There may not be a challenge about the pricing, but simply the process of going through the procurement system, getting through the delegations of authority, getting those things approved, just takes a lot of time. So if there's a shot that you'll run into a situation, it's sort of like snow removal. If you live in an area where you have snow, the wise property owner negotiates a snow removal price with a contractor before it starts to snow, because the price is better. And trying to find a snow removal contractor when it's snowing is much more difficult. So go through the headache, go through the negotiation process. And the front end, sort of like insurance. You may need it, you may not, but I guarantee if you get in a situation where you have that, you run into that rock or you run into that bad soil that has to be excavated, and all you have to do is say, oh, here it is, we've already negotiated the price, we're going to be billing for this, and you move forward with the project, you're going to be really happy. Because when you run into a situation that you don't have a price for, you're faced with a dilemma. Either you delay the project and try to get approval, or you proceed with the project and hope that you'll get paid and believe the things like, some people will say, we can work through this, just go ahead. I'm sure we'll get it sorted out. We'll get it worked out when the invoice comes in. And that opens us up to selective memory. So if you've been through that, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. And that takes us straight into point number two, which is to present detailed written change orders. And talk a little bit about that, and what you would think that we would do that, right? If you have to do extra work, that we would document that so we can, bill later or the owner, for example, they, you know, make sure that, okay, make sure everything's documented so we don't get overcharged and things like that. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, you would think so. And, you know, what happens is we're in firefighter mode. You know, we're tough construction guys. We're out there slinging concrete and mud and rebar and pipe and equipment and grunting, and testosterone is everywhere. And there's a problem, and, you know, we're problem solvers. So we say, ah, to hell with it. We'll solve it. We'll sort it out later. Don't worry about it. You know, we'll either the owner's rep says, yeah, we'll find something to offset that, or the contractor says, ah, we'll, you know, we'll take care of that later. But it just doesn't happen, unfortunately. And it should go without saying, because every contract I've seen says that a change order is not binding unless it is written and it is approved by the owner. So take a few minutes, write an email, write a letter, and document the situation, document the background, whatever led up to this change order, document the cost, and get somebody's signature on it, and make sure that you get the right signature. A situation I ran into a few years ago, and actually I wrote a case study about it because it makes for a nice comparison. I've done two projects in the same city for the same municipality and had very similar problems and very different outcomes, primarily because of the difference in approach. But in one project, there were wholesale changes, scope changed on a daily basis, designed on the fly. It was just crazy. And I came in on the tail end of this project to try to clean it up. But one of the problems was the engineer was saying, yes, this is okay, this is approved, proceed. And sometimes the engineer would defer to the director of the particular department that was doing this project. Well, in reality, the contract said that the only person who had the authority to sign on a change order was the mayor. So even though an engineer said, yes, you have approval, even though they went up one step up the food chain to the director of the department who said, yes, that's approved, none of that mattered. And it actually got to the point where the city attorney came and got involved and said, guys, that's all nice, but it doesn't matter because the guys who told you it was approved did not have the correct authority per the contract. And that's what happens. That's how lawyers operate, is they go by the contract. And if we want to deal with lawyers, then we have to operate the same way as well. So contracts are written for a reason. So let's follow those contracts and we'll stay out of a lot of trouble. And one of those ways is to present very detailed written change orders and don't do work without approval. And again, it puts you in a dilemma. One of the reasons we don't do it is because the project's charging forward. We have general conditions, we have overhead, we have subcontractors, and it's this train is moving and these sort of things delay it. But do you want to be a philanthropist and fund the project, or do you want to get paid for the work that you did? That's really the question you have to answer. And the best way to do that is to make sure you get the written change orders approved by the right person.
Mm-hmm. And for the owners as well, that's something that is, what do you think their role should be here in encouraging, stakeholders to go and do this in detail?
This is definitely in the owner's interest. One of the best mechanisms for protecting an owner, let's say, I worked with some corporate clients, and their budgetary control mechanism is that no work could be done without a purchase order. And you know, the purchase order was the mechanism that allocated money to a budget. And there was a case that I was not involved with, but the company that I was working for had to deal with. There was a project manager operating as the owner's rep, and the construction manager presented change order after change order after change order, and the project manager approved them, told them to proceed, but did not go back and get the purchase order or get the budget adjusted to meet that. So at the end of the project, construction manager was left in a situation where they have completed $200,000 worth of work and they didn't have, there was no mechanism to get paid. The purchase order did not, the their billing exceeded the purchase order, and the system just kicked it out. And the way that that is avoided from the owner's rep standpoint, from the owner's standpoint and the owner's rep standpoint, is to make sure that a detailed written change order is prepared by the contractor, presented to the owner, and that all the appropriate folks who have the appropriate authority sign off on that and make sure that the budget is approved. Because if you are the owner's rep, if you're the project manager managing the project or a facility manager, the last place you want to be is in a situation where you have approved or authorized your contractor to proceed with work and you don't have the funds to pay it, and it's your fault because you didn't follow the protocol. So it's in everybody's best interest to prepare detailed written change orders. I used to tell my contractors, if you don't get an email from me, if you don't get written authorization from me, don't do it. I don't care if I ask you to do it, or I don't care if someone else from my organization walks on the job site and says, "Hey, could you do this for us?" You say, "I can't do it without a change order," or "I'd be happy to do it, but I just need a written change order." So I know it sounds really simple, but the problem is, in the heat of the battle, it just falls to the wayside, and unfortunately, it's a cause of millions of dollars of claims every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm guilty of it too, because our service is usually hired after the project has been awarded and started, and all of a sudden they call us to go and have cameras installed, and sometimes because of agreements, we can't bring outside, you know, electrical contractors and things like that to do work, so we have to work with people on site. And basically, "Hey, would you mind just running this cable for me there?" And I've learned over the years that should not do that, because, you know, if that costs money, and it's not on anybody's budget to do that. So one thing I learned over the years is to, we do it over email, but if I know that I'm going to be needing help from people on site to do anything, I make sure that I talk to the project manager or to the owner's rep, make sure that that's in place. So when I get there, they know and they expect me to be there. But again, I had to, it took a long time for me to kind of get into that mindset that, yeah, no, things need to be done properly, because, you know, I don't want to be presented with a bill later or, you know, being in a delicate situation with my client as well.
Absolutely. And one of the problems is that it's the process of getting a change order approved. It's a lack of tools, because even though we have email, we have text messaging, we have smartphones, those things get lost. You know, on a large project, there could be hundreds of potential changes every month. And the sheer number of those issues is difficult to track. And email is not a good way to track them, because if you're like me, if something gets below the fold or below my screen in my inbox, it's gone. And that's one of the reasons that I developed the tool that I mentioned. It's to make it easy to report change orders and easy to track them. They stay right in front of you and they don't get lost in an email shuffle. So that part of it is the process, and part of it is the firefighter mentality that we contractors tend to have. But it seems like a simple problem to solve. And, you know, from an outside standpoint, you know, a non-contractor would say that's ridiculous. Why would you do work without getting a signature? But we unfortunately do it far too much.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to number three, which is look for value engineering opportunities. Let's talk about that for a bit.
Sure. This is one that is not so apparent. And as I mentioned earlier, part of the problem with change orders is that if the approach is, I want to get a bigger piece of the pie, then it becomes adversarial. But if we shift that approach to, hey, how can we make the pie bigger, and then we each share in that, then it becomes much less adversarial. We go after win-win solutions, and our customers And our clients love us, and engineers and architects like to work with us because we're bringing solutions instead of causing problems. So one of those is to, one of the ways to set yourself apart from the competition is to look for and identify value engineering opportunities, to study the plans and the specifications and be proactive in it. And at the beginning of the project, say, hey, here's a few things that maybe you didn't understand. There are some words in specifications that can cost thousands of dollars. Sometimes it's just as simple as offering an alternative manufacturer. Engineers and architects are often guilty of speccing the Cadillac of the model. Maybe it's an air handling unit or a cooling tower or some large piece of equipment. And you know, if you're talking about a $250,000 piece of equipment and you can save 10% by just changing to a different manufacturer, then you can save some money in the process and the client ends up with an equivalent product. Now, you may be asking, why would I do that? Why would I reduce my contract? Why would I offer savings to the contract, to the owner, especially if I'm working on a cost plus percentage? Because you're taking money out of my pocket. Well, yes, that's true, unless you negotiate a cost sharing clause in your contract where you say, all right, Mr. or Mrs. Owner, at the beginning of the project, if we bring a cost saving value engineering opportunity to you and it saves money to the project and you approve it, then we would like to split the savings to incentivize me as the contractor to save you money. So from the owner's standpoint, they're saving money. They have the opportunity to approve or reject any sort of proposal. And from the contractor standpoint, they are making money. Now, it may seem a little bit counterintuitive. How do I make money by reducing my cost? Well, here's how it works. Here's an example. I was managing an office building. It was about a $10 million office building in Arkansas for Procter & Gamble. And we negotiated this contract, cost saving clause in the contract. And we said, bring us your opportunities. You know the local market better than we do. You know the local subcontractors. A lot of cases, if you have an engineer in Boston and they're designing a project in San Francisco, things are different there in San Francisco. Suppliers are different. The trades operate differently. And you take advantage of the local boots on the ground that know how things actually work. So we said, bring us your ideas and we'll split the savings with you. So they came to us with an alternate air handling unit manufacturer, and the savings wasn't huge. It was maybe $25,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. And we reviewed it, had our engineer look at it. Performance was great. Warranty was the same. Equivalent product, made sure that our customers would get the same experience. And we said, that's great. We will take your $25,000 cost savings, if that's what it was, and then we will reduce your contract by $12,500, and you will get to keep the savings. So they profited $12,500, even though the contract was reduced. And we, as the owner, we saved $12,500 and got an equivalent product. So that incentivizes your contractor to save you money instead of incentivizing contractors to make money by change orders. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it just it puts everybody on the same side, right? Like everybody exactly. Benefits from the savings instead of pitting contractors against the owner.
Exactly, and it leverages because the general contractor will cascade that approach down to their subcontractors, and maybe they'll share the savings with their subcontractors. So it leverages this groupthink approach. It leverages the collective knowledge of the local market and of the construction force there on your project. And it also has an interesting indirect effect, because when let's say the general contractor proposes something like that, then they take some ownership in it. And it's a subtle shift in approach to the project, where now the general contractor is pulling in the same direction, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, makes total sense. And interesting how you were able to do that. And I'm sure the people listening right now will, you know, the gears are turning in their heads to see how can I implement that into my contract or into my, my project. But
yeah, again, too, if you, you know, it's so, what's, I don't want to say this. It is not hard to make yourself stand out in the crowd as a contractor because there's such a bad perception about contractors. And I guarantee if you come to your client and say, hey, I've got some ideas that will save you money. Can I talk about them with you? And we just like to share in the savings. You'll stand out in the crowd and you'll make an impression to that client that, that they won't forget because they are used to having to fight with contractors over change orders.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be great to win a contract because of who you are, not because of your price?
Exactly.
You know, and, because of the value you bring.
Exactly. And that's really the way the market is going because as the big ship turns slowly and moves away from the low bid and moves toward qualification-based selections, even in state, federal, and municipal type projects, certainly the private sector can do whatever they want already. And if they have to fight with somebody, then you know it's sayonara. You'll never hear from us again. So it's a move that needs to take place to stay competitive because other contractors are doing these sort of things. And if you want to get ahead of the curve and even stay away from being behind the curve, you need to start doing these things every opportunity you get. Even if you have a hard bid contract, offer those opportunities, offer the cost saves, get on the same side of the table as your client. They'll love you for it. Believe me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about number four, which is sooner is better.
Yeah, this is so dumb that we do this. And I say it goes back to the firefighter mentality. Let's charge through it. Let's get the fire put out and then we'll, you know, it's sort of a shoot first and then let's sort through the bodies later sort of approach. And it just doesn't work in contracting. There may be other businesses that that works in, but it certainly doesn't work in contracting. As soon as you see an issue, as soon as you see a potential issue, it needs to be flagged and brought up so that it can be assessed. You know, what I like to do is have guys in the field who, you know, again, leverage the boots on the ground, the guys that are actually seeing the work on the job site, in the foundation hole, in the ditch, on the piece of equipment, get them empowered and with the equipment to report field changes as soon as possible so that they can, as soon as they see them, they get reported. They don't have to decide if it is a change order, if it's not. I don't expect the guy on the backhoe to pull out the contract and decipher what isn't a change order, but I want them to throw it up against the wall and then I'll decide if it needs to stick or not, if that makes sense. So sooner is better. As soon as you see an issue, report it, bring it up, get it to a person who can compare it to the contract and say yes or no, and then immediately route it to the owner's rep because let's say we look at two situations, two changes. An example would be, in the municipal world, in my world, it's we found a buried manhole that was not on the plans. And the value of dealing with that is, let's say it's $5,000. Well, if I bring that up to my client and say, Mr. Client, we've encountered this issue. It's going to be $5,000. Here's what we did. Boom, boom, boom. Here are the facts. Here's what the contract says about it. Here's the cost. Please authorize this so we can proceed. That's case one. Case two is, let's move forward. I'm pretty sure Mr. Client will understand. We'll sort it out after the fact. I present a change order after I've dealt with this buried manhole. I present the same change order with the same information, same cost, and it gets kicked out, but it will get approved in case one because owners want to know before their money's spent. If you're trying to send change orders in after the work is done, you're trying to spend the owner's money, and that pisses them off because that's not your job. You don't have the authority to do that. And in most cases, they'll think you're trying to sneak something past them. And let's face reality. Before you do the work, you have leverage. You have not spent any money, and you can say yes or no to the price. in case number two, you have no leverage. You've done the work. You've invested the labor. You've bought equipment or bought material. You've used equipment, fuel, overhead, resources to do this work. And maybe you'll get paid. You may have to do that for 50 cents on the dollar because Mr. Client says, no, I don't agree with your pricing. I'll pay $2,500. So same end result, same cost, but very different outcome. If that makes, does that make sense?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. And, and you know, it's almost like common sense, but we don't, sometimes we don't take a step back to think about it, but as with everything, if there is a problem, it's always better to be proactive and do it sooner rather than later.
Exactly. And none of us like to be treated that way. Imagine if you went to, well, an auto repair shop, you send your car into the shop and this has probably happened to a lot of people. Your car goes into the shop to get the oil changed. And imagine if you agreed to pay $39.95 for an oil change. And then they bring your keys and say, hi, Mr. DeWalt, that's going to be $497 because we decided to change your serpentine belt, change your spark plugs. Looks like the intake gaskets needed to be replaced. So here's your bill for $497. What's Mr. DeWalt going to say?
Yeah.
I didn't ask for that.
Right.
Screw you. I authorize you to change my oil, not do $497 worth of work. But it's just a bad approach. We don't like it to be done to us, so let's not do it to other people, right?
That's right. And the next item is could be a link to this as well, which is anticipated cost report. So you you do a cost report in anticipation of the problem, correct?
Yeah, this is a tool that it's one of my favorite things. I developed this when I was an owner's rep, and the issue with the pain that I was dealing with that caused me to develop this tool was that I had a, let's say I'm building an office building, this building in Arkansas, and I have an engineer, I have an architect, I have a general contractor, a civil engineering firm, a landscaper, and I have clients. I have the president of that organization who's going to be moving in, a few other stakeholders. I have all these stakeholders in the project, and they all want to add stuff to the project. So contractors wanted to add things. Maybe there's field changes. The clients would say, you know, it'd be really nice to put a $12,000 leather sofa from Denmark in the front lobby. Or, hey, we'd like to put in revolving doors at the front, or all these different things. And the traditional approach would be to say, guys, let's just get the building done, and then we'll decide what we want to add later. Well, if you want to add revolving doors to a project, it really makes sense to do that during construction instead of after construction, right? Mm-hmm. So what I developed this anticipated cost report that had my base cost, and then it tracked every potential change, some that had to be done no matter what. Let's say we hit a rock or some unforeseen condition. It had to be done no matter what. And then I had the nice to haves, the leather sofas from Denmark or the revolving doors. And I would put these things in this report, and it would show a cumulative list of all the changes that had to be done, as well as the nice to haves and the requests, so that my stakeholders could make the decision. I could go to them and say, okay, you've asked for revolving doors. You need to make a decision on that by a certain date so that we can integrate it into the construction schedule. And here's the impact on the budget. So you can build these if then sort of scenarios, like, okay, if we do the revolving doors and the couch from Sweden, and we take advantage of the cost savings on the air handling unit, then our budget's going to end up here. So it gives us flexibility to hit the budget, but it, one of the big tools was that it gave the flexibility to implement these changes into the project when it made sense, like the revolving doors or the leather couch. So we could pick from the menu of changes and get the job done and hit our budget, deliver on time, customers got what they needed, and the customers had the opportunity to make the decision because ultimately it's their budget. Now, the way I use this with municipal clients is, one of the problems that we run into is that in a project where there's lots of changes, there might be some nice to haves. One of the problems is that customers will say, well, let's just finish the base contract and then we'll decide what we want to add to the project. The anticipated cost report allows me to help my clients deploy 100% of their capital. Because if I have a contract for $567,000, I want to help them deploy $567,000. I don't want to leave money in the contract. So the anticipated cost report shows, lets them look out in the future to see, okay, if we do this and this and this, this is where the budget will end up. It's sort of like the analogy I use is some projects are like landing a 747 on an aircraft carrier in the ocean that's moving. You have this moving target. You have a set amount of fuel. You got to land this thing at some point. And sometimes people get scared and they bail out, or they put it in the water and they don't have to, or they land and they've got a lot of fuel left. So I want to help our customers spend, get as much value as they can out of their contract, help them deploy their capital and implement the things they want to do at the right time in the project.
Mm-hmm. Now, the issue here that I'm thinking is, doesn't that, well, I guess if you're being proactive with your change orders, then it wouldn't be an issue, but it means you're maximizing the use of the budget. But let's say something goes wrong now, and you did some work that was not approved. Now you're really in trouble because there is no wiggle room here for the client to pay.
That's right. Exactly. There's no cushion. Now, from the owner's side, if I'm the owner's rep, I always have contingency. And this surprised me, but when when I was managing corporate projects, they wanted to spend 100% of their money. They did not. It was actually bad to have money left over in their capital budget at the end of the year. Because in publicly traded companies, the way it trickles down is you need to spend a certain percentage of your net outside sales to meet, to satisfy the analysts, the stock market analysts. It's a little counterintuitive, but if we went back to our corporate clients at Procter & Gamble and said, hey, great, we had this $45 million. The good news, we had a $45 million capital budget and we cut $2.5 million out of it. Here's $2.5 million back. Go ahead, pat me on the back. Didn't we do great? They would say, are you serious? We gave you that budget to spend. You've got to spend it. And so the key there is you always need some contingency. You need contingency money to fund the unforeseen changes toward the end of the project, but you also need some contingency projects to spend the unforeseen money. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, makes sense.
It was a strange world for me, but that's the reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not only that, if you ask me how much it would cost for me to do something and I do it and it's less money than I told you, then it's like, well, how come you gave me that number first? You know, how good are you at estimating and you know, were you trying to, you know, build yourself a buffer? And so if you have that budget, then I can see why it would make sense to actually spend it all, especially in government, because you know government is not for profit. So if you allocate money to do something and you don't use it all, then okay, well you collected too much taxes. That's what you meant, and you don't want to be in that position, right?
And in another similar situation is for municipal projects, there are municipalities will raise bonds. And they'll have a bonding program, and they need to deploy the capital that they raised through the issuance of bonds. And we've had some clients that their capital deployment was too low, and they were getting pushback from the bonds because the financial institution issuing the bonds needs to deploy that capital. Mm-hmm. So there are some not so apparent mechanisms in the background that are incentivizing project owners to deploy all their capital, and an anticipated cost report like this will help them do that. Nice. So it's actually in their They want to do that. And really, a project is nothing more than a set of problems that you're throwing money and equipment and material and labor and resources and technology at to fix. So the more, if you spend 87% of your budget, in some cases, you've only solved 87% of your problems. So in certain types of projects, especially with maintenance type work, if you are working on a unit price contract, every $1,000 they spend means they've solved $1,000 worth of problems. So it's not intuitive, but in some cases, you're helping your clients by spending 100% of the contract amount in their budget.
Very good. Now let's move on to the last one, processes and tools. And I think maybe it's a good opportunity to talk about the software that that you have developed. You obviously know a lot about change management and have had to deal with it for a long time. And so I think those are the best tools, the tools that are created by the person who is experiencing the pain. So tell us a little bit about the software that you created, what it's called, and how it works, and how we can find it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you're right. I've certainly taken my lumps, and I don't consider myself an expert. I've been beaten up a few times and run home with my tail between my legs and figured some things out, I think, that have worked for me. So I'll start with the pain that contractors are dealing with, and we'll really focus on contractors. And if you're an owner's rep or an engineer, then just consider this sort of a peek behind the curtain of how contractors are operating. The pain that I was dealing with in the company that I manage is that there was this constant barrage of changes. There could be unforeseen conditions. The inspector would change their mind. Then the inspector would change their mind again the next day, and then again the next day. And it was this wild carousel ride of change. And at any point, to try to figure out what we were supposed to do, you'd have to take a snapshot of the chaos, and it was constantly changing. So moving targets, it was just crazy. On top of that, the business was growing. We were doing work in a remote city, and we didn't know what was going on. We were doing work and not getting paid for it. Because we didn't know it was done. It was not getting reported. We were not tracking labor very well. We didn't know where equipment was. We were chasing paper and trying to figure out what's in scope, what's out of scope now, what's changed, what have we done, what kind of revenue are we looking at? It was all this post-mortem stuff, trying to figure it out. So I developed a system. And I call it Snap Field Report, and you can check it out at www.snapfieldreport.com. And in a nutshell, it helps contractors to stop chasing paper, provides a mobile-friendly, field-friendly system that allows people in the field to report potential field changes, to report completed work, and then harnessing the power of the internet, it sends that information to a secure server where folks in the office can see that information. So they can be, here's an example of how it works. Let's say somebody in the field spots a potential change. They pull out their iPad, their tablet, their iPhone, their Android, and they fill out a form that takes a couple of minutes. It identifies which project they're on, what the issue is, what they think the impact to the schedule or budget may be. And then it gives them the opportunity to identify what work items or unit prices or scope or let's say divisions of work are affected by this. They can put some notes in there, and then they can take a picture of it as well. They hit the submit button, and it goes into the database. Project manager back at the office gets an email. Hey, here's a field change report. Here's the information that was submitted along with a picture. And at that point, they can do with it what they need to do with it. Finish it, pricing it out, send it on to the owner for approval, whatever the case may be. There's a similar process for completed work reports as well. Very similar. Same device, same approach. Track what work was completed on a daily basis is my recommendation. Could be weekly, but my recommendation is daily. What material was used, if you want to track that. It also has the ability to track labor hours, so payroll can be done from this information as well. Equipment usage, notes, and pictures as well, so that you can document the work that was completed. And very similarly, it goes to the database. The project manager gets notified. They get a nice report that can be shared with clients. And then the back office type systems in the database will prepare billing reports as well. So it will prepare a schedule of values report for a specific project, for a specific date range, to avoid all the paper that goes along with it. We're trying to eliminate the variety of spreadsheets and paper forms and text messages and emails that are currently used to track change orders and completed work, and consolidate all that into a very concise system that makes it easy to report, makes it easy to see, shows a dashboard of the key information that project managers and business owners want to see, and ultimately cuts down all that project admin time, all that paper chasing time, frees us up so that we can run our business instead of chasing papers.
Wow. And excuse me. So does that work on top of, so let's say a project is already using some sort of project management system, like, you know, those things that, you know, for collaboration and communication, document sharing. Does that work on top of that, or is it separate? How does that work?
This is a standalone system.
Okay. And it's, you say you can use it on your iPhone or your iPad. Mm-hmm. Is it platform independent, or how does that work?
It is a platform independent. We looked at building native applications for Android, iPhone, but they are, you know, we're not, as contractors, we're not the most technically astute folks. So I didn't want bugs. And the simplest way to deliver this product is in a platform independent approach. So it's a web form. It's accessible anywhere that there is a 3G, 4G wireless connection on a smartphone. It also is a desktop interface. So it doesn't have to be mobile friendly. It could be used with just a desktop, but really the most benefit comes when it's used in the field with some sort of mobile device and reported back to the office that way.
Okay. Yeah, and I know that you know, superintendents are doing some sort of reporting already, either daily or weekly. So usually daily, from what I see. So it's just a matter of maybe migrating to a more digital system, and maybe, you know, not waiting until they get to their desk at the end of the day to do it, but to do it as they walk around and as they see work being done, as they are approached by subcontractors to do this or that change. I guess you can build that muscle memory to, you're going to do that? Let me take a picture of that, you know.
That's a really good point, because a tool is only as good as the process that it's a part of. And it takes a while to retrain. So there is some behavioral change that's required to do this. But the key is to empower your folks to do it and make it clear what you want them to do. If you see something that looks suspect, then when in doubt, just fill it out. just pull out your phone.
Yeah.
Fill out a change report, a field change report form, snap a picture, and then move on. Because we all get, guys in the field, you know, their primary job is to get work done, to put work in place. And one of the reasons they don't report field changes is because it's such a hassle. Right. You know, it's, I got to fill out a report, and then I got to answer all these phone calls, and I've got to describe it to the jackass back in the office. So if there was, you know, maybe they're thinking, if there was a system where I could take a freaking picture, fill out a form and send it, and it gives them everything they need, and it gets them off my back, man, that'd be awesome. And right. that was what I wanted to do, because I was the guy in the office trying to get details and correlate pictures from digital phones and downloading them from phones, and was this job site, and what day was this? And so now we have a system that They take a picture, it comes with the report, with the data, saves time, better information, and it is, personally, it has eliminated so much chaos from our operation. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to make it available is if it's helped us this much, then there's probably some other boneheads like us who are doing the same dumb stuff, and maybe it'll help them too.
Good. Now, contractors, they're operating on, you know, as we said, a thin budget. So what is the cost structure? How does it work? How do you get paid?
We have a, well, as opposed to some other software packages out there that I looked at when I was considering building, before I built this system, you know, there are systems out there that cost, that may require a $30,000 outlay or $9,000 or $10,000 outlay. That's really hard to justify. And the other problem was they're so big that they're painful to implement. I needed, maybe it's selfish or short attention span or whatever, but I needed a solution I could implement quickly, and it solved the particular problems I had and didn't make me do a bunch of stuff that would solve problems I didn't have. It didn't answer questions I wasn't asking. So I've designed the system. It is a monthly service as you go, no contract, no initial fees. There's no equipment to purchase because it takes advantage of current iPhones, iPads, Androids, tablets that folks have. So it's $79 a month, and that covers up to 10 users. So this is really targeted to help the small, medium businesses out there that don't have some sort of enterprise system, and they don't have a lot of money to spend, and they don't want to lay out, you know, $10,000, $20,000 for a system like this. So it's $79 a month, basically breaks down to $7.90 per user per month. And really the ROI on that investment is, we think about one, what is one change order worth? What is one item that could be getting missed that you're doing for free? What's that worth? If you have a particular item that's, let's say it's $800. In my municipal world, replacing a manhole frame, I could get paid $900 for that. Well, that could easily be swept under the rug and lost in the paper shuffle. So having a system like this, if I spend $80 a month and I catch one manhole frame that and I get paid for it that I would not have otherwise been paid for, I just got a 10x ROI. And then there's also the cost savings of time spent chasing paper. You know, if you have a project manager, maybe they cost you, let's say they're $60 an hour, all in with total labor burden, $60 an hour, and they're spending 10 hours a month chasing paper. Well, if you could eliminate that, save $600, reallocate that $600 worth of effort toward actually running projects instead of chasing paper, you get an ROI there. So I priced this thing cheap. I want it to help people. I want to be able to easily justify a 10 to 20X return on investment to try to help people, because, you know, we as contractors, we need to get better. And my goal is to provide tools and resources to try to help us get better and turn the ship, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, $80 a month, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, we buy coffee. What's a cup of coffee? $4.50. So,
right.
You buy, that's two cups of coffee per employee. You're probably spending more than that on Folgers or Starbucks coffee for your office, I would say. So it's, you know, I think it's affordable. I want to be able to look somebody in the eye and say, you can get a 10x ROI on your investment. It'll make your life easier. You'll be less frustrated, less stressful. You'll have a better relationship with your clients. You might have a better relationship with your kids. I don't know if it'll make you jump higher or make your hair grow back, but I haven't tried it yet. You know, it could be.
Very good. And so just very quickly here. So when people sign up, they just get access to it's a membership type of site that you log in, and then you have your form there to fill out and press a button to take a picture. How does that work?
There is a Well, there's a demo, and actually, I should have mentioned this previously. We offer a 30-day free trial.
Okay.
Full access, full capabilities. Ain't holding nothing back. No credit card required, because I hate that. I don't like when somebody requires a credit card at the beginning. So to sign up, you go to snapfieldreport.com, put in your company name, your name, email address, hit the sign up or subscribe button. And then, of course, there's a subscription process, maybe an email or two to confirm, and then they'll have full access to it. We have a user guide there to guide them through the process of getting their projects and things set up. And literally in 30 minutes, they'll be ready. They'll have the back office stuff set up and be ready to start submitting field change reports and completed work reports. Because again, we want to only fix the pain that people are experiencing and reduce the pain associated with implementing a new system. So that's one of my goals, was be able to implement the system in less than an hour, make it affordable, and make it easy to use so we can get it out to the field and have people using it right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on the website here right now. It looks really nice. Very straightforward. Give you three options. Start your free trial. And if you're a contractor listening right now, or if you're in a position to recommend this to a contractor, I think it's definitely... I mean, at the very least, you can use it for 30 days, right?
Absolutely.
And then say it's not for me. But I think once you start getting to the habit of documenting these changes and seeing the results that it can bring you and the control that you have over these things, then you're going to learn to use it and rely on it to stay on top of things. So again, it's snapfieldreport.com.
Yeah, and actually, one thing I should have mentioned is right on the homepage, there is a sample report button, mm-hmm. and that is basically a demo. So if you click the sample report button, you'll get the opportunity to actually fill out a form to see how it works, select some work items that and equipment and labor and things that have been set up for this bogus company, mm-hmm. That we created, and then you put in your email address. And when you click submit, you will receive the sample report that is that you created, and it's identical to the report that is created by the system, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. So,
yeah, it does.
And you can take pictures. So I would encourage people to try it out with their tablet, their iPhone, their Android, and be able to snap a picture and see how easy it is to fill out a report and submit a picture and then see what happens when they receive the report.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Now, Tom, is there any questions that you think I should have asked you about either change orders, change management, or Snapfield report that I missed?
No, I think you covered it very well, Caesar. I'm confident people are tired of hearing me talk right now. So I would say if you're a contractor and you're experiencing concerns about, if you're asking yourself questions like, am I getting paid for everything I'm doing out in the field, or what the hell is happening out there? Or you're tired of chasing paper forms or sifting through emails, things like that, then you're right where I was. And I'm confident that this will help you out. And I'd love to hear what you have to say about it. I want you to try it out for 30 days. Send me your feedback. We have a form on the within the spreadsheet, I'm sorry, within the application. We want to hear your feedback. We want to make this thing better, tweak it. If we're not in this for the money, I'm not trying to get rich off this. I'm trying to help people, and I really want to make this better for the whole industry. So if you have any ideas, shoot it to us. I'd love to chat with you about it as well. So send me an email at info@snapfieldreport.com. Hey, I've even got my phone number on the website. That's my cell phone number on the homepage. If you have questions, give me a call. I will answer. I'll talk to you. I'd love to chat with you about it, let you know what I think it'll do for you, and then hear what you have to say about it.
Very good. All right. Tom, I usually at this point, I ask, you know, if people want to learn more about you and where should they go, but everybody can just go to snapfieldreport.com and they can call you on your cell phone there. I see the number right here. So Tom, thank you so much for your time. It was really, really interesting to talk about this topic with you. You obviously know a lot about it and you have a tool that that seems like it's there to you know, to fill all the needs and ameliorate the pain there that it's associated with the change order. So thank you so much for your time and for being on the Construction Industry Podcast.
Hey, absolutely. I really appreciate it, Caesar. It was great talking to you.
So everybody, that's it. I hope you enjoyed there my conversation with Todd. I surely did, as you can tell, it's a bit longer. So be sure to check out the show notes for today's episode, as it contains a nice outline of my conversation with Todd here today. And also, check out snapfieldreport.com to see what Todd has come up with. It's a simple, elegant way to address many of the issues that we covered today on the show. Before I go, I'd like to thank people who left me reviews in iTunes for the Construction Industry Podcast, especially Augusto from France. Thank you, Augusto, for the great review that you left me there in iTunes. You have a Portuguese name. I wonder if you're Portuguese or Brazilian, but you are from France. So thank you so much. Now, if you're listening right now and you haven't done so and you enjoy the show, please consider leaving the show a review and ratings and rating in iTunes. It's really simple to do. We need to have the iTunes software installed in your computer. You look for the Construction Industry Podcast and you can leave a review there. It really helps the show be more noticeable. It helps with the rankings of the show, so more people can find it too. So in short, when you search for construction, for example, in iTunes, if the show has lots of reviews, chances are that you will find it if you do that. So if you would consider doing that, I thank you in advance. And finally, I'd like to remind you that, again, my name is Cesar Abade, and I'm the project manager at Remontech Construction Camera Specialists. We have been installing construction monitoring systems, including cameras and all sorts of other equipment, for medium to large construction projects around the world since 2002. It's what we do. We've been doing this for over 10 years, and we are specialists. So please go over to myconstructioncamera.com. myconstructioncamera.com or constructionindustrypodcast.com. It's going to take you to the same website and see how we can help you manage your construction project better. So that's it for the show today. I hope you enjoyed it, and I will talk to you next time.